Fed Talks is a weekly podcast featuring federal program staff from the Georgia Department of Education and Georgia's public schools. For many individuals, the purpose of federally funded programs is unknown. Through its Fed Talk series, the Georgia Department of Education is sharing more information on the ways Georgians are leveraging federal funds to serve Georgia students and Georgia schools. Welcome to Fed Talks.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Craig Gear speaking, and we're glad to have you with us today. We're going to begin this podcast series, and this one is about summer programming and what programs are offered through our federal programs in our local school districts here in Georgia. So as usual, I have with me my colleague, John White. Say hello, John.
Hi, everyone. John White with Federal Programs.
And we also have as a special guest, a moderator today with us is Megan Frick. Megan is our Director of Communications.
Hi, everyone.
All right. And we have kind of a large crowd here because we do have quite a few programs, which is a good thing, that offer summer programs for our students. So we're going to go around the room and let these folks introduce themselves. So we'll begin with Dr. Baker.
Good morning. I'm Meg Baker, and I work with a program that works with English learners, or students in our schools that are learning English at the same time they're learning everything else.
Great.
Hello, I'm Ken Banter. I'm the Title I Program Manager. And Title I works with every school district in Georgia and provides funds to really address the needs of those kids that may be not performing academically where they need to be.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Barnett. I'm the Education Research and Evaluation Specialist for the Region 1 area for the 21st Century Community Learning Centers program. And the 21st Century program provides tutorial services and academic enrichment programs for students to help improve their academic performance.
I'm Megan Frick. I'm the Communications Director for the department. And in that role, I get to have a great vantage point to the work of the department as a whole and some of our initiatives related to summer learning and summer programming.
Hello, and my name is Israel Cortez, and I work with the Migrant Education Program. This program serves the children of home workers. This program, the emphasis is to support the supplemental education of migrant children and youth. These are the children and families that come to our state to harvest the fruits and vegetables.
Hi, I'm Donna Hatcher. I am the manager of the Student Support and Academic Enrichment Grant. It's a relatively new program that brings incredible flexibility to any type of funding.
And I do have to put in a plug, John. I think if anyone has any questions about any of these programs, I think we did some podcasts earlier.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
We hit most of the programs.
We did hit most of these programs.
Today.
So the audience is always welcome to go back and hear those podcasts if they want to learn more about these programs.
Check the archives and they'll be able to see the earlier ones.
But let's get on to talking about summer programs. So, John, you want to?
Yeah, so you know, our focus today is really just to hear how these programs work with students during the summer. So we've got just a couple questions, and if each of you could just respond so we have an idea of what your program does. Megan, I'll let you ask the first one if you want to go ahead and get the conversation going.
Sure. So Meg, we'll start with you. What's the focus of your program, and what summer initiatives are included?
Thank you, Megan. Yes, our program is for English learners, so the focus is on learning the English language. There is another subtle focus along with learning language. It's to build a background of experiences and attach language to that to prepare the schools for the classroom. So we do have a lot of summer programs that focus on language.
What's an example of one? What would a parent expect to see?
A parent might see a camp called the English Language Camp, where they would focus either on science, or it might be a math camp, but they would be focused on the language of science and building experiences and attaching language to those experiences so the student would be prepared for school in the fall.
So that happens like in a school building, a specific school might have something like that?
Yes, it could happen at a special location. They might have field trips involved with it,
okay,
which would be excellent for our English learners to build these background experiences. It's very motivational. It has, even summer programs have increased attendance in school itself.
Excellent.
And we could probably expect that the schools would have reached out to the parents to let them know if their school is offering a camp.
Yes.
By now, it definitely...
Yes, so. By now they would have reached out. Some schools are very strategic with their language camps. Mm-hmm. They might strategically choose fourth or fifth grade students just to give it that extra push before going to middle school. Some would have a high school camp right prior to high school to get them ready to come into high school. So there's a lot of variety. Some run a preschool. So they would let the parents know, yes. And a big part of our language camps is to involve parents. So parents probably would even have been invited to be part of one day or several days of the language program.
Great.
Ken, I know your work in Title I is a little broader. Can you give people a little background on that and how summer learning and summer programs are involved?
Yes, Megan. Title I can serve any student in a Title I school. Whereas Meg just described her English learners program, she can only work with those students that are identified as an English learner. Title I can work with those English learners as well as migrant students or special ed students, anyone that has been identified that is struggling academically. So Title I funds can be used for a summer program for those students that are struggling academically. They may not have performed well during the academic year or on the Georgia Milestones test, and so either the district or the Title I school in the district could establish and form a summer program to help those students over the summer to not lose what they have learned or to advance their learning. Okay. To overcome those difficulties.
Is it pretty typical for most school districts in Georgia to offer summer programs with Title I?
It's not a requirement, but they can. In fact, I was in a district yesterday where they have set aside some of their Title I funding to do a summer program for these students that we just described. And included in that, they have transportation where they're going to run the school bus to pick up the kids and take them home, which is an advantage because it takes the burden off the parents to get them there.
And I would imagine primarily in our elementary schools, am I correct? Because that's where a lot of the school-wide programs are.
It could be for any Title I school, but yes, you are correct. A lot of them are focusing in on the elementary, but this particular district is addressing the elementary, middle, and high schools with their summer program.
So like Meg, districts probably would have reached out by now if they are offering some Title I.
Or they're finalizing their plans, but usually, this is April.
Right.
So usually by May, they will get something out to the parents to notify them, hey, we're planning this. If you're interested, let the contact person in the district know.
Well, Jeff, how about 21st century? I know with the after-school focus of that program, I imagine summer initiatives are a huge part of the program.
Yes, it's my personal favorite time of the year with summer programming. It once again ties into improving academic achievement and offering enrichment opportunities that are fun and engaging. And so the goal, just as with after-school programming during the summer, is just to make sure that students don't suffer what we call the summer slump and that they're still working on those skills that are going to be necessary to help them be successful in the upcoming school year.
What are some examples of a program that might be offered to make sure students have that engaging experience?
I'll share an example from last summer during a site visit. It was elementary school summer program, and students had opportunities to, the unit was on fossils, and they were going out and they were just going around like actually digging up, bones that the teacher had hidden. And they also went to visit the Fern Bank Museum. So they also do field trips during the summer. And the field trips have to, once again, tie into the goals and objectives of the grant and also to the standards. So they were able to get the hands-on experience on site and also go to visit Fern Bank Museum where they were able to actually see the fossils.
Well, that sounds amazing. Israel, can you tell us a little bit about the migrant education program and how the program is serving those students during the summer months?
Yes, definitely. The migrant education program, we are very unique. We are a very small program, but we try to impact as many kids as we can. Our target is to try to encourage the kids that are have been in school this during their regular year. Our focus during the summer program is to try to improve what they were not able to master their content by the state assessments or local assessments. So our target is to try to help those children through a summer opportunity. Our target is the reading and math and science and anything else that we can include in those migrant programs. Now, not every district provides a funded summer school program with migrant funds, because not a lot of the districts have a lot of money to be able to provide a summer program. But this is where we try to join forces and coordinate our services and connect our migrant students with other federal programs with districts that might be providing an after-school program, like, for example, 21st Century Grants, Title I schools, or Title III ESOL classes, anything that we can encourage our migrant families or students to push their kids to go to school. Now, we do have a huge population that comes during the summer. A lot of these kids are not or have not probably been enrolled in none of our schools in the state of Georgia. So we encourage our districts that even though those children have not been enrolled in our state or their school, we try to incorporate, we try to bring those kids into those schools. Now, if a school has enough funding to provide a migrant fund to summer school, we bring those kids in, because that is one of the services that the migrant education program should provide to those kids. Because if some of these kids left the state of Florida and they're here in the summer, they would have lost their opportunity to go to a summer program down in Florida. So we provide them that opportunity here while they're here in Georgia. Now, this is a very unique program because we also serve a big population. These are the young men and young ladies that we call dropout students, or out-of-school youth. These are the ones that are just primarily here to work. Now, we do try to encourage districts and everyone who knows those migrant students and youth or children to provide services wherever we can find them. We have districts that send teachers into the home to work with those children in the home. If they got enough funding, they will serve them in the school building. But a lot of the kids during the summer, they're here for 2 or 3 weeks, 6 weeks, they come and go. So a very challenging population to serve, but nevertheless, we encourage every district to serve everyone that is under the age of 22 who had met the program eligibility. We've had teachers to go into motels to work with those young men and young ladies that are just here primarily working. One of the things that we focus there is the English language. For the most part, most of those youth, all they want to learn is the English language. They just want to be able to carry a conversational communication with just the public. So those are the things that we do. We emphasize the academics, English language, you know, and everything that we can do for the adults, youth, and migrant children, anyone that we reach.
And this might be a great time to, because you said something really important, that we serve students and children who are under the age of 22. And that really applies to all of our programs. These would be children and youth who have not graduated from high school and are still under the age of 22. So that really applies to most of our programs here. So that's because that's probably something people would want to know. And as Meg pointed out, I think a lot of these programs provide opportunities for parents when they can, which is really nice as well. So it's a combination of parents and kids who are eligible under the age of 22 and haven't finished the K-12 education.
And Craig, if I may jump onto this, the one thing that we try to do with the migrant education program is that it doesn't matter if it's a 6 week long summer school program or if it's a 2 day program. The key to it is, and the key to our migrant students or our migrant youth is, at least visit them, serve them, even if it's once a week, maybe twice a month, at least there is something that we can do with them that is academic, to keep their, at least their little basic learning intact, because a lot of our migrant kids, they will miss a lot of those opportunities because of their mobility.
Well, it sounds like schools are doing a lot of work. I know that that's a population that they probably have to really think creatively and think, you know, they may not have all the resources available. They may not have a car to get to summer programming, that kind of thing. So it sounds like schools are really working to address that.
Very much.
And I think that's actually a struggle for all of, you know, you mentioned transportation. So one, that's what's great about these programs, I think, is they really look at that complete picture, Megan, where they're transportation, meals, which I think one of our later podcasts will talk about, some meal opportunities.
Absolutely.
All right. Donna, how does your program provide summer opportunities and initiatives for students?
Well, the interesting thing about the student support grant, which some people may be familiar with Title IV-A, is that we're only limited by two things. That's what does the district need and their imagination. And probably the most significant thing about what we do during the summer, it's about supplementing and expanding something that's already in existence. I see a lot of districts that may have a program that's associated with any of these other programs, but their goal is to reach more students, to increase the access to the information that's being offered. With that, it becomes that supplementary nature. As far as 4A, the program itself, I've seen people do something that's completely funded with 4A, like a STEAM camp. Or they might pull in a small group of students who may have had some discipline issues during the year, and they target activities that are academically based, but again, try to broaden their horizons without the clutter of the year, of what's going on in the year. So it is really up to who the district wants to reach, how they want to extend that reach and supplement any of these programs.
And that actually, I mean, that's, we'd like to talk more about how these programs all coordinate right with each other for summer planning. So you brought up some good points that the districts all have a variety of funding sources, but what they need to do is be very strategic about integrating these together and creating very comprehensive and broad programs. Anybody have any examples that they're familiar with or any insights about how it might work?
I know in the program Ken oversees and in English Learners, a lot of our schools are putting together programs that are serving the needy academic students that need academics, but then they'll provide an English teacher at the same time. So there'll be an English teacher in the mix. Mm-hmm. And they'll be supporting the English language of the students. So that's a way they coordinate program, summer program. So,
and Craig, excuse me, if I may, something. So one of the things that we do with migrant in the migrant education program is that if there are already programs in a school building, we try to encourage our migrant kids there to allow our use of our migrant funds to maybe do a homeschool, a home-based program, so that way the kids get some kind of academic support during the day at a school building, but then the migrant funds can then supplement what happens during the day, and this might can occur during an evening or after school or maybe during other times for other kids that might come that we might not know a lot about them.
So Israel, are there examples of, and Jeff, coordination between the migrant program and 21st Century?
Very much, yes. We've had a lot of our migrant kids, because they do qualify, most of the kids for 21st Century, that what happens is that a lot of our migrant kids, we are pushing them into those 21st Century grants, after school programs, or even summer school programs. And then that allows us to be able to use those migrant funds to other isolated, concerns or academic concerns that migrant kids might have, or different populations that out of school youth or maybe preschool children that might not have been eligible to come to a 21st Century grants after school or summer school program.
As program director, when I was in the Clark County School District, I worked exclusively with the migrant program. So we worked hand in hand with both programs.
Yeah, I don't know about all of you, but I know when I was young and in the summertime, I'd love to be outside and do exercise. To what extent do these programs, or can these programs incorporate, things outside, sports, recreation? I know we focused a lot on academic support and achievement, which is our primary focus, but is there an opportunity for these to do things like soccer and dance? And
Jeff, I know 21st Century.
Yeah, that's under the Richmond category. One of our programs specifically has in their goals is outdoor engagement and exercise, and that's tied into the end of the year evaluation. But for academic enrichment, the possibilities are endless, so that definitely falls in that particular category.
Donna?
And student support grant can also participate in that. There is a focus area for safe and healthy students. where programming for nutrition that impacts the whole child, or any type of exercise or healthy activity that helps that student become more well-rounded.
So, like, and what about art and music and stuff like that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I see a lot of these types of programming. I'm also seeing several districts taking opportunities for the educationally based field trips, like you mentioned, with that, to get students that are out, to get them out of the classroom into the communities and to react in situations where they haven't been before, and just broadening their horizons.
We also try to, especially with the enrichment activities, because they're learning and students learn in so many different, you know, capacities and areas. So when they're participating in the art classes or they're participating in the STEP classes, they're also tying those into the standards as well. So as a skilled teacher can just say, you know, this is involving math, this is also involving, you know, science to a certain degree. So they definitely, you know, benefit from those academic enrichment classes, both after school and during the summer.
And Israel, I'll pick on you a little bit, because when I worked with the migrant program, I was familiar with this, but you use the summer as an opportunity to do some health screenings as well, right? So you'll have working with some nursing groups come out and actually do health screenings with kids,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's right. Through Emory, there's a different groups of physician's assistants, nurses, psychologists, dental hygienists, dentists. There is a group that, well, there's actually like two groups that go to South Georgia, to different various locations where families come. And they have different summer programs, health fairs, where they do a lot of work with our migrant kids. They go into the school building and do all kind of health screenings, from anything that they want to do, from even special ed evaluations to find out where those learning disabilities might be. And they do everything for those kids, for those schools. There's two teams. I think they each bring about 100 to 150 people that come and do those things. And during the day, they go into the school building. They work with the children. They do educational activities, health activities. They do the health screenings. And then in the evenings, they go and work with parents, the migrant workers, and also those youth that might not have ever had a chance to come to the schoolhouse.
I've also seen with 4-H funds, districts use those funds to making that concept mobile, where they have a mobile health unit or even tutoring. It can be anything that they already have in existence. But again, it's about extending the reach of that programming, of that activity, and they'll use their 4-H funds to help supplement that exact type of thing.
Well, Megan and John, the benefits, we've only
scratched the surface.
Yeah, scratched the surface, but the benefits of these federal programs are pretty extraordinary. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great information.
So I think what we'll do is wrap this one up, and we'll look forward to joining our next group, which I believe is going to be around school and
school nutrition.
So look forward to it. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.